Okay, my name is Jo Claire Corcoran, and I am a director with the Equine Welfare Alliance.
All right, give me some background on your organization.
Equine Welfare Alliance was formed a few years ago to function as an umbrella organization under which many different organizations and individuals could work together then towards improving our horses' welfare and towards ending slaughter in the roundups of our BLM horses and burros.
Okay. And there was a recent incident involving the EU putting a temporary halt on horse meat that was processed in Mexico and Canada, which are the plants where horses are slaughtered because slaughter has not restarted yet in the United States. And what is your what are your thoughts about this situation?
Well, you know, when we first got the news, we spent a great amount of time that day trying to confirm that it was true, calling every plant in Canada, every major auction house that does have slaughter contracts and known to have slaughter contracts and spoke with them, spoke with kill buyers, contacted the EU, CFIA, you know, we did everything to try to confirm. And, of course, we were elated, because that's our goal, is ending this. We were unsure at that point, of course, whether it was temporary or permanent. So while we were happy, it was cautious optimism. And, you know, we were able to confirm that the plants were closed to U.S. horses for slaughter to the EU. It wasn't until Monday when we actually had a reason, which was confirmed by the EU as well as some of the plants in Canada. So it was short-lived, but it was an eye-opening experience, too. I mean, we've known that this is going to happen because of the changes with the EU regs that are going to be implemented next year. And so, you know, we rallied the troops. We have an idea of what needs to be done. We know that a multifaceted approach will have to be implemented when the plants actually do shut down. And so, you know, that's in the works.
Okay. And you say when the plants shut down, you're referring to those in Mexico and Canada that provide meat to the EU. And this all centers around drug residues. Is that correct?
Right. The EU's new regs that go into effect next year basically state that any non-EU country must implement a drug residue tracing program which meets their requirements of their passport program, which means that I'm going to call it a passport for lack of a better term, has to be attached to a horse prior to the age of 6 months of age. And essentially any medication, substance that is used or given to a horse will then have to be done so by a veterinarian. And every substance will have to be documented in this passport. It's also chipped. And that passport has to travel with that horse. It's non-transferable from one horse to another. It doesn't stay with an owner and, not go to the new owner if the horse is sold. It must go with that horse. If that horse is then given any of the banned substances, then that horse has to be marked on that passport as non-eligible for slaughter for human consumption, because banned is banned. There are no withdrawal times for banned substances because they can't test those substances that are known to be dangerous to humans if ingested in any amount. So, in essence, one particle is dangerous for that, possibly dangerous for that human to ingest. So in essence, when that happens, there won't be any horses eligible. The U.S. does not have a passport program. Canada does not have a passport program. Mexico has been using a program that Lawless and IEBA are promoting, but in the most recent report from the EU on the Mexican plants, which was released Thursday a week ago, right the Thursday before the shutdown of the plants on Friday to the U.S. horses, in that report, it stated that the program that Mexico is using does not meet the EU requirements for non-EU countries. So at that point, no one has a program. I don't see how, as a country with our budgetary issues, we can justify implementing a program that would require a whole new department under the USDA, that would require people to enforce it, to track it, to implement it. I mean, you know, our food safety budget was cut $9 million with the last year before in 2011. And now they would have to increase it. Where is that money going to come from? And what that would translate into for horse owners is that means every time you need to give your horse a dewormer, the veterinarian would have to come and deworm your horse. Now, as a horse owner, I couldn't afford that, and I don't think there's many horse owners out there who could.
Well, as you know, there's a move to create a domestic market again. No, a domestic market, uh-huh. Not again, but a domestic market for horse meat. And I don't know to what degree the EU, what amount or percentage the EU gets its horse meat from Mexico, Canada, and potentially the United States. So it brings to fore the question of what is going to happen to these abandoned animals if these plants shut down, if the U.S. doesn't restart its program. Does your organization have plans? And you're not the only organization out there that's trying to stop slaughter, but for dealing with these horses. And then, as you know, these questions have been asked a lot, and who would pay for that?
Right. Well, 70% of the market of U.S. horses slaughtered for horse meat go to the EU. So that's 70% of the market. So it's a huge chunk. Developing a market in the U.S., 80% of the people in this country are opposed to the slaughter of horses for horse meat. If you saw the outcry that happened with that restaurant in New York City, in Wells Diner at the MoMA PS1 on Long Island City, you know, people were outraged from across the country and that they were going to serve horse meat. And as a result, now they're not. Well, for various reasons. One, they found out it wasn't legal for them to serve it at this point. You can't sell horse meat in this country that's not been inspected, you know, by the USDA. And he just found out that, you know, he didn't mean to insult people. He didn't realize it was going to be that of a problem. He is not from here. So he learned that Americans don't want our horses slaughtered. As far as abandoned horses, that's a myth. The majority of the horses that go to slaughter are not abandoned. And the supposed increase in abandoned horses since the slaughter plants were closed here in the U.S., I want to see hard facts from Sue Wallace as to where she gets those numbers, because EWA did a six-month study on these supposed abandoned horses. We followed up every alleged report, usually put out there by Sue Wallace, United Horsemen, and IEBA. And what we found, we went to those law enforcement agencies, we went to those locations, we went to those counties, we talked to those, we called them. They weren't founded. But what we did find, the ones that were substantiated, were mostly in the southwestern states, close to where export holding pens were. And those horses had slaughter tags on them, They had the initials of the kill buyer on there, like D for Dorian Ayache, and had been rejects from the Mexican slaughter plants. That was the only substantiated cases. All of these other cases were grossly exaggerated. You know, there was a horse, a horse that was found. Well, the owner showed up to pick up the horse. You know, the horse got out. That happens. So I would like for Sue Wallace to provide hard evidence that these horses are being abandoned in such alarming rates. The other thing is, for instance, her numbers that she gave in the article the other day, 3 months, 48,000 horses. Well, that's 192,000 horses a year. That number is grossly exaggerated. They're not slaughtering horses at that rate. So one of the things that when we look at what is going on and where the horses are coming from that are going to slaughter, you have to take into consideration it's not a nice business. You have horses, you know, homeowners or horse owners fall onto hard times, and, you know, our economy has been dismal at best, and horses are a luxury item. And so, you know, somebody loses their job and they don't want to get rid of their horse, but they have no choice. They take it to the auction. What I find out is that most horse owners still don't know that horses are being slaughtered. They think it's not happening here and therefore their horses are safe. They think when their horse is sold that it's going to another home. They don't realize that it's very likely going to a slaughter plant. The other consideration to keep in mind is that the majority of the horses stolen in this country are sent to slaughter. People think, well, we're not living in the days of the Wild West. You know, horses don't get stolen. Horses are stolen every day. The number that's reported is actually way lower than the actual number, because most police departments won't take reports on it because they consider it to be civil issues, or, you know, they won't really investigate. The only real numbers to get is from Stolen Posse, Stolen Horse International Net Posse, and not everyone is reported to them. So it's really hard to get finite numbers. But I know three people personally whose horses were stolen and sold to slaughter. So, you know, that's another consideration. Once slaughter's off the table, there's a couple things that's going to happen. Breeders and horse owners will have to start being a little more responsible. And if someone abandons a horse, you know, there are laws out there against abandoning an animal, and those laws need to be enforced. But once the breeders start taking responsibility for the horses that they are putting on the ground, you know, if you're going to breed, breed responsibly. You know, we're not saying don't ever breed. We're saying breed responsibly. You know, instead of breeding for color and you breed 100 foals or put 100 foals down on the ground and you get one or two that are the right color, you know, you've got to start being more responsible. Instead of breeding animals and horses that are, you know, HIV or HRTA positive or carry the gene, you know, step back and look at what you're doing. You stop these breeding incentives. AQHA set out to be the largest breed registry in the world, and they are. And look at the majority of the horses that go to slaughter, quarter horses. So slaughter will be pulled off the table as a way of culling the bad breeders. You know, good breeders don't want their horses to go to slaughter. Good breeders do not breed for slaughter. So, you know, those things will play a role in dropping those numbers. The other thing is there are shelter-in-place programs, hay banks, that are implemented and that are being expanded upon. So if a horse owner does find themselves in financial difficulties, they don't have to worry about, you know, taking their horse to a plant or to an auction. They can keep their horse. Here's a way to feed your horse. We'll help. You know, time limits. If after this time you haven't, we'll help you rehome the horse. It's going to have to be a multifaceted program. AVMA, veterinarians are going to have to step up to the plate, and help, because I think they've helped create this as well, in promoting slaughter. And, we're going to need some gelding clinics. And let's be realistic. We may need some euthanasia clinics. There may be a horse, that will need to be put down. It doesn't need to. Its quality of life is so compromised and should never have been taken to an auction house either. So, it's not a one way approach, and it's going to require everyone stepping up to the plate. Both pro-slaughter and anti-slaughter. All of us horse owners and people are going to have to step up to the plate and accept responsibility for the horses that we have on the ground and adopt more responsible breeding practices. Your smaller breed registries, your higher-end horses, they haven't suffered in this market. Their market hasn't gone down. You don't see Friesians or Hanoverians or Tracheners going through the slaughter auction. Doesn't happen.
Can I go back to the, not go back, but have you addressed the CBO report that came out about the number of abandoned and unwanted horses that seemed to confirm that indeed was the case since the slaughter market was no longer available?
Which report? I'm sorry?
Congressional Budget Office report.
Oh, the GAO report. Well, when you look at that report, We actually, on our website, you can go and you can see where we've addressed that GAO report. They don't really have anything to back it up. They actually don't have the numbers. They don't have any studies that back up that report. It was all anecdotal. It wasn't, they didn't talk to and follow up the actual reports. They just talk to people who are pretty much not the ones who are filing the reports, allegedly, the reports in the papers about supposedly this and that. Those things weren't followed up on. They just talked to veterinarians, a few here and there, but there was no real statistical analysis or research actually done.
You're saying that Sue Wallace doesn't have numbers. I would like to know what numbers you can point to say that this, and you're saying that the GAO report was not accurate and is anecdotal. Where are the numbers, and who has the right ones?
Well, we've done a great deal of research. Our president, John Holland, other directors, we have had medical doctors and veterinarians who've done the actual research and papers. We've got those on our website. Those numbers, those supporting documents going to the USDA and getting the actual numbers, going to, Canada and working with them and Mexico to get the actual numbers, working with the EU. We've got all of that information. Every piece of paper that we put out, the documentation is there to cite, and our sources are cited. And those are factual sources. It's not a link that you go to that doesn't support that.
What would you say, if you were to point to the main thing on your website, where would somebody need to go to see this? And what would it say?
On the website, there's two areas. There's position papers. There's press releases, and then there's studies. So that's three. Sorry.
Okay. And what I'm needing is for you, what I'd like is for you to paraphrase, what the summary is, because you're telling me there are numbers on your website, but I'm not hearing the numbers from you.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure what numbers you're wanting.
Well, you say there are not the number of abandoned horses that are going to slaughter that are that Sue Wallace and the GAO claim, but I'm not hearing from you how many there might be that are abandoned.
Well, that's what I said. In the report, we found out that the only abandoned horses that we found were rejects from the export pens, with their slaughter tags on them and the initials from the kill buyers still spray painted on their sides. That's the only reports that we could substantiate. There were a couple where horses had gotten loose, you know, this kind of thing, but the owners had been found. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. The numbers are not supported. Those numbers are not there. That's what we found. We also found that, you know, and did a report and a study that found a direct correlation between unemployment rates and abuse and neglect of all animals. It's not just horses, but it's all animals that are connected to that. So, you know, saying that it's a lack of slaughter plants, and I think the thing to look at, too, here is when someone if they do abandon an animal, they're not doing it because they didn't want their horse to be slaughtered. You know, if they wanted their horse to be slaughtered, they would have taken their horse to the slaughter plant or to the auction, excuse me. But, you know, when the way Sue Wallace's reports read is that you should be dodging horses all over the roads. You know, her number of 48,000, the USDA numbers and the numbers from Canada and Mexico don't support them. Those slaughter numbers are on the website.
Okay. On the shelters and hay banks that you referred to, you said there are more of those that are coming up. Of course, we know there's a situation with the drought and the hay shortage for all livestock. So I think you mentioned that as part of your organization's multi-point approach to the problem. In other words, you're not saying that's the entire answer.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, there is no one answer. I mean, it's just too complicated of an issue, and to have one, you know, we'll just do it this way. You know, that's just not it. I mean, that's one approach. You know, one piece is educational too. You know, people have to be educated on horse ownership. You know, when someone does come to a hay bank, and this is something that's indicative not just of horse ownership and someone who buys a horse and thinks, oh, I'm going to get a horse, how fun that will be, and has no clue as to how to take a care of a horse or feed a horse, and then they end up in financial problems or whatever. You know, part of going to that hay bank or a shelter-in-place program is, you know, going to be educational as well, and getting the word out to people, you know, how to properly take care of a horse, and before you think about buying a horse, you know, what it is. You know, the drought, of course, has been a serious issue, but there is still hay available. There is land that's being opened up by the government to be farmed and change from being laying fallow into that they can now farm and grow hay on. You know, so those things are, there's several different things that are going on, not only just us, but that the government's doing to help ease the issues of the drought. The drought covered a good portion of the country, but there are other portions of the country that had fantastic hay seasons. I was at a farm a month ago. They got four cuttings off of one alfalfa field, and were getting ready to cut the fifth. You know,
I'm curious, where was that?
It was in Kentucky, just between Louisville and Lexington. And I live across the river on the Indiana side, and there were lucky to get two cuttings. You know,
sure,
so it's how just an hour difference.
Right.
You know, in the availability.
Of course, I'm in Missouri, and I mean, you have to get that, you'd have to the shipping costs would just be crushing. So that's the problem. Hardest hit drought.
And I think people have to take and to start thinking outside of the box too. You know, when people pool together, you know, there's greater purchasing ability in numbers. So when it's just like a co-op, you know, the co-op has greater purchasing ability because it's a number of people together who are buying as opposed to one person buying. And therefore, you know, you can get hay shipped in from other places. You know, 10 people go together and buy a whole tractor trailer load. Well, you know, it cuts down on your price. It cuts down on your shipping. You know, hay prices fluctuate from year to year. You're never going to be able to be guaranteed, say, well, if you're a horse owner, you're never going to have to pay more than, you know, $4 a bale. You can never say that. But, you know, slaughtering an animal that isn't meant for food, that's not an option. You know, you can't slaughter an animal that isn't raised for food to send to, for humans to eat. It's not an option. You know, as an agriculture publication, and as I said in my comment, you know, on your website, our agricultural animals are raised under food safety guidelines. And those food safety guidelines, you know, are taken very seriously. And those producers know those guidelines, and they know they have to follow them. Or if that meat comes back contaminated or with substances that are banned, then the USDA is going to come back hard and heavy on them. Back in July, a kill buyer, and I'm sorry, I can't recall his name right now, received a letter from the USDA with a very hefty fine because Canada found bute in the horse's tissue and gave the information to the USDA. USDA went back to the guy. He had falsified the paperwork, and he admitted to falsifying the paperwork. So, you know, it just, you can't risk human lives because some people want to take an easy way out, and that's what slaughter is. Slaughter is the easy way out, and it's a way that some people think they're going to make money. And if your bottom line, and the only way that you can make a bottom line value on a horse is by slaughter, then perhaps you shouldn't be breeding horses.